Let's go around the NFL in the loop style.
Why are you smiling?
Because I love football.
Brought to you by Quick Assist. Here's John Lopez and Reggie Adetula.
I'm going to tell you all about how much fun you're going to have this season.
On Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610.
That's right. Let's go around the NFL here in the loop. Sports Radio 610. You got John Lopez. You got Figgy Fig. You have myself, Reginald Adetula, hanging out with you. And apparently we just got some news come down.
Yeah, we did.
Figgy Fig, would you like to break it yourself?
Yeah. Joe Mixon, that guy that was running all over the place, he is the AFC Offensive Player of the Week.
He better be. Like, if he wasn't. Especially on a day where it felt like, or not just a day, but a week, where it felt like their offense was kind of down in general.
Yeah.
The man who puts up 159 yards on the ground and what, damn near 180 all purpose?
All together, yeah.
Yeah. That's Offensive Player of the Week.
I could have seen them giving it to the guy from San Francisco because it was like,
well, this AFC,
story.
Though. This was,
that's true.
This
that's
one
true,
was AFC. Yeah. Who else was a candidate, I wonder?
I don't know that they throw it out like that. I think they just let us know who won it. And then
yeah, no, I'm just curious. Like, among us, who might have been in the mix, no pun intended, for that. I guess maybe Tyreek?
Yeah, Tyreek did put up a pretty big day when it came to receiving. I got to go back and actually look at the scores now. And see who did put up all them yards. That's a NFL, or an NFC rather, player, Jayden Reed.
Yeah.
He had a big game, but that's on the NFC side.
Baker, also NFC.
Yeah, I don't know that there's a lot.
Hey, they made the right pick. Right?
Oh, no, they absolutely made the right pick, but it's like I was saying earlier. The scary thing about the Texans is they figure two, and they probably will get better everywhere except running. Kind of hard to get better than that.
And if they do, good God almighty, right? Like, some people got to start talking to Nick Casario about getting more money if that's the case.
How about Clint yesterday? Just since we're on Mixon, the best running back the Texans have ever had.
I think he said the most talented.
Most
talented running back.
But, appreciate that clarification. I'm sure Clint does as well.
He would came in here like, nope.
Hey, Lopez. But still.
Because, I mean, candidates that were throwing
Arian Foster was pretty talented. Pretty talented. But no, I'm not saying he's wrong. I'm not saying I even disagree.
No, it is something to think about.
I'm just saying it's an eye opener.
I think the key word is talented too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because how do you define talent?
That's the beauty of sports talk radio, and I'm not trying to like disparage Clint at all because I appreciate what he was doing there. Is that sometimes you just gotta put one of those things out there that you're like, you can't check me on this.
Yeah.
Right? Like there's not really a tangible number that we could put on this, quantifiable data that we can use for this.
Yeah.
All kind of speculative. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So with that being the case, you got to let me rock.
It's an opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Clint, he would get down in the sticks and be like, oh, no, the way Mixon moved his hips and the way he cut his feet and all that stuff, he'd get in the nitty gritty.
And look, he's not wrong.
He's not wrong about that.
Like, it really was beautiful watching Joe Mixon tote the rock. Like, it was a thing of beauty. I was enjoying the technical aspects of it, the ways in which, like, he, you know, batted an arm away on a tackler and just kind of slid his body past
the cutbacks.
A defender, right? The cutbacks, these types of things, just putting your foot in the ground. It really was gorgeous. So
this was the perfect move, man, because I know we were all in on Saquon Barkley, and I think that still would have been a good move, but I think this is the perfect fit, man. Joe Mixon was the perfect fit.
And a better number, right? Like, this is a better, I guess, efficiency move in that way. And so, congratulations to Joe Mixon, and the 281's right. Also, congratulations to the offensive line, who did a lot of work to make sure that it looked real good
No doubt.
You mentioned this. You put this on the rundown here, Lopez, because we were talking about, as some people call him, the nasty man, Deshaun Watson in Cleveland.
Some people do call him that, huh?
The nasty.
Yeah, we just got more insight into a case that popped up with a Jane Doe who accused him of sexual assault, forcible sexual assault, and that's happening here in Houston as well, from October of 2020. And it looks like Pro Football Talk, right? Mike Florio got their hands on Deshaun Watson's contract. Good job there. I do wonder when these things happen, right? People in media, I understand what the onus and the impetus would be for, like, hey, let's see if we can get our hands on the contract. Who gave him the contract?
Okay, so you're going to learn this about me if you don't know it already. I people say I'm a big conspiracy theorist. I don't know if I necessarily like.
Oh, get the X-Files theme ready.
I don't know if I like the terminology there, but I do believe that things like this that are made public or big plans that sort of are in steps, you know, in steps, like, you know, step one is this, release this to the media. Step two is that, et cetera.
You said plans or plants?
Yeah, I think that's what he said.
Yeah. Both. I guess technically I am, you know, more of a conspiracy theorist than anything. I'll put it simply. I don't think a lot of things happen by accident in the public eye, you know, in terms of what is written and released and newsworthy. This was not an accident. I'm telling you right now. It said Sports Illustrated has, quote, obtained Deshaun Watson's contract. And in that contract, there is wording that they made very clear. It includes a potentially relevant clause where Watson can be considered in default if he is reasonably believed by the club to have engaged in personal conduct that materially and adversely affects or reflects on the club. Guys, this wasn't obtained. I mean, I guess technically it was, but it was given.
My thing is, this should have been out the day he signed that contract.
I do recall talk when he signed the contract that he would have to, like, you know, make clear the situations that had happened prior.
But we didn't see the contract.
But see, right.
But it was speculation,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah, because people mentioned that part. Yeah. You know, if he stay on the right track and he got to go to therapy and all this other stuff, they mentioned that. But yeah. His contract wasn't leaked and nothing like that. The details.
Not at all.
But I think.
But it was after Sunday's performance.
Sure.
Yeah. Hey, they trying to wiggle out of that one, man.
Well, my thing about it is, if you wanted to get it out with the performance, we probably could have done this a lot earlier, right? But I do think there is something to be said for the idea that anytime that the media comes with some information, they have sources that have helped them get that, right? Like, and so when with any news, there is an understanding that, hey, somebody deemed it worthwhile to provide this information. And so who. Consider the source, right, is always something I say, and I'm sure that you often think of.
Well, and you know, you have a journalistic background. Obviously, I do. We've all been taught from the time we entered this profession, you know, the one thing you have to know about sourcing is the sources have an agenda, too.
Correct.
And so you have to kind of muddle through and filter through, you know, what is their intent, what is their agenda, and try to find the real story. There is no question in my mind. There is an agenda and an intent with releasing this to Sports Illustrated. It wasn't like some you know, whatever Cleveland newspaper. Not all due respect, but I'm saying, like, doing a lot of digging and going through you know, the system to get all these things released. No. It was obtained. There's a reason it was obtained.
But I mean, it is somewhat understandable in my vantage point at this point, right? Like. You want to make sure that, and the idea is, hey man, if you're the Cleveland Browns and you're setting up for that particular move with everything that's happening, you want to make sure that, you know, the PR battle is also won, so that you don't have to answer the questions afterwards. That once that news comes, or once you make that move, people are like, yeah, okay, I can put two and two together.
Exactly.
And it adds up to four.
Exactly.
Moving on around the NFL. Bill Belichick, who seems like he might be all right when it comes to this media thing, right?
I think so.
He did Monday Night Football with the Manning cast, and he was joining the Pat McAfee show a couple days ago. And I don't know, it seems like he might not be in on this quarterback in the AFC South.
You know, that's the one that always got me when the player said, well, I was trying to make a play. I was like, well, how about trying to make a good one then?
Like a bad play.
So the play that Levis had where he gets out of the pocket, he flips the ball, you know, underhand, backhand, whatever it was. And that's just, you know, even if you hit it, what do you really have? Not much. And then if you don't hit it, then, you know, you lose the game. So it's just, there's no upside to that play. There's only downside. And, you know, it's just, you know, that's just a terrible decision. And Tom and I've talked a million times about, you know, if you complete this pass, what's the upside? You gain 1 yard, you gain 2 yards. All right, you guys going to get tackled anyway. Like the play we just saw in Tennessee. I mean, what if he had completed that? What's the upside? 2 yards? What's the downside? Lose the game. You know, like that's you just can't make those kind of decisions. And even if that ball had been complete, there's no upside to it. And so, you know, Tom did a great job of, you know, risk management and, you know, cut his losses. And so, you know, rather than turn the ball over, All right, you lose a couple of yards and you get sacked, but at least we can gain our field position back by punting on third down.
You know, to be fair, it's not like he's like, this guy stinks.
No, he's not wrong.
No, he's just saying in that particular moment, let's be fair about it. What's, you know, well, you heard him, you know, well, what's the upside, et cetera.
He sounds like the old school head coach that's like, when you throw the football, there are two things that can happen, or three things that can happen, and two of them are bad, right? Yeah, like, that's some of that. But I think he's absolutely right in that.
No, he's absolutely right, and he's really just talking about that particular play. But, boy, you could just sense it the way he was talking. Like, he is not a fan.
No, he has a disdain for all them dudes that are like, I'm going to go make a play. He's like, no, fit into the system. Do the right thing. Yeah. Make the right choice.
It just wasn't a smart play.
Yeah.
No, I mean, absolutely not.
You don't want to be a head coach on the sideline looking at a quarterback making a decision like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, those are the points of maturity when it comes to quarterbacks, right? Like, you want the guy that's capable of making a play, but the quarterback that is also, like, so hell-bent on making a play that they get away from the things that are routine and the things that make sense. It was one of the things that really annoyed me with Josh Allen early in his career. Is like, he's a dude out here running around, taking hits, and then, like, throwing it up to a fullback downfield. It's like, dude, that's not a reason. That's not a smart way of playing. Like, I understand that you can do that. But is it smart to do that? And I think
he's not young. I mean, he's young, but he's not a rookie. And so I think what it says is it also kind of is a commentary on what separates with quarterbacks that, you know, have some upside and can be pretty good occasionally to a C.J. Stroud or someone like that. So that I think that's what he's talking about. Like, the decision making, it's just not going to be there.
So we got some more news on some players around the NFL. Justin Fields, according to Mike Tomlin, will start again week two. And that is not with any level of caveat or contingency on Russell Wilson. That Justin Fields thing, I guess he did enough to hold on to that job in Mike Tomlin's perspective.
Are we going to see Russell Wilson start a game again?
Sure. Because that feels like a situation where you have a couple of guys and neither one of them is like particularly incredible. I feel like you'll get a game that's bad enough with Fields where you bounce back and forth.
It stands to reason that you will, but I also feel, I think he realizes, it wasn't a flukish performance that he had in Denver. In Denver. I think he just feels like there's, back to that, the upside with Justin Fields. I think they're going to ride with him.
It's possible. Yeah. It is quite possible. And then tomorrow we have Thursday Night Football. You actually mentioned this in the pregame.
I was like, that's tomorrow?
You were like, damn, we're already there. So, yeah, go ahead and start setting your lineups, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. Right, we'll remind you again tomorrow in the loop. But Raheem Mostert will not be playing for the Miami Dolphins. You think that makes a big change in how they are able to go out and compete against the Bills?
No, I think absolutely it does. That's their MO, man, to be able to have those running backs going through there. And I think the other thing that it changes is Devin Achane is not 100%. He is participating in practice today, but not in pads. So, you know, Dolphins, you know, they start chipping away at those running backs, it changes the whole game.
Well, they got like four of them.
Yeah, but they're down to two. They
drafted the running back this draft. Like
right?
They love just like collecting running backs.
Yeah, that's how it should be, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, especially when you can get them for the low. So shout out to the Dolphins. Excited still for that game. That's going to be a fascinating one. Then continuing in our talk about like what's the pecking order in the AFC, I think that will give us more information in that one. Before we go here, a legend in the game when it comes to especially being like a Texas running back, Adrian Peterson. Just a wild specimen of a player. Like, I still remember the idea of like returning from an ACL incredibly quickly. Just a wild dude, right? He made over $100 million during his 15-year NFL career. I forgot that he was just hanging on, bouncing around.
Oh, yeah.
The there too. That's 15 years is insane for a running back. But apparently he now faces a debt in excess of $12 million. And he's been ordered to turn over some assets to be able to pay it. So apparently a court-appointed receiver has accused Peterson of playing what is called, quote, a shell game in order to avoid payment because he owes some money. He had a $5.2 million loan from 2016. It became an $8.3 million judgment in 2021. And then attorney's fees and, I guess, also a level of, I guess, what's the right word that I'm interest?
Oh, yeah.
Brings you to just over $12 million.
And you know, the funny thing, when I saw this, first of all, and I was telling you guys this before, so it's just sad. But a lot of people say, how does that happen? He made over $100 million and he's $12.5 million in debt. I'm beyond that. It happens. Because so many of these athletes get manipulated and used, and like maybe 15, 20 years ago, I was like, I would be, hey, how does that happen? It's not a surprise. No. It's just sad.
There's also a quality of life aspect of things where you, and it sounds wild, like you kind of have to spend money at a particular
in some
level.
Areas, yeah.
And then the taxes and all those types of things. There's a lot of money drain in there, not to necessarily be super defensive.
You don't
want to
be rich
here,
yeah. And sometimes you just have the wrong people in your corner.
That's what it is.
And a lot of people take money, and so much money coming in, you can't tell who took what until it's too late.
And as much as the NFL has all these resources that you can use, you know, for money, you know, management and all these other things.
If a money manager is vetted, all it takes is one time where they decide to defraud somebody. And
exactly.
There you go.
It's just sad. But from $100 million in earnings to $12.5 million
in debt. So, about $12.5 million. Best of luck to him in trying to get that together, mm-hmm. because that's the thing that scares me the most. Making him a lot of money, cool. Owing someone a whole bunch of money, terrifying to me.
Yeah.
Going to be completely honest, terrifying. There you go. Let's around the NFL here in the loop. Keep it locked here, though, because I think when we get into what's popping, there's some Texans news that's happening as mm-hmm. well when it comes to the roster churn that I think is going to be deeply interesting. So hang around with what's happening. But coming up next, we talked about how Joe Mixon 159 yards in week one, 30 carries. That just isn't sustainable. But what is the optimal distribution for the run and maybe even for the pass? We'll talk about that next.